Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Brett Rentmeester. He is the President and Chief Information Officer of Winrock Wealth Management. He founded Winrock Wealth Management to bring tailored investment solutions to investors seeking an edge in an increasingly uncertain world. He's a veteran in the industry. He was a founding partner of Altair Advisors, a $3 billion investment firm, and he served on the investment committee with a specialty in alternative investment opportunities. Prior to that, he was manager at Arthur Andersen, helping to build their investment advisory and private client services practice. He's a CFA and also earned the Chartered Alternative Investment Analyst designation. And he has an MBA from Northwestern University's Kellogg Graduate School of Management. He also has activities as a philanthropic donor in areas of serving as the founding board member of the Northwestern Center for Innovative Medicine and a member of the Major Gifts Committee of the Edward Hospital Foundation in Naperville. Welcome, Brett.
Hey, thanks for having me, Richard.
Great. Today we would like to discuss with you a topic that you have keenly in your mind, and that is in the area of cryptocurrencies. First, before we begin, would you like to give a disclaimer?
Yeah, I think it's important to just mention that we're going to be talking about the theme of cryptocurrencies in general, and in no way should this be considered investment advice, and that people are always encouraged to talk to their investment advisors.
Great, thank you. And we'd like to go over a number of developments in the cryptocurrency space. What's happening in the technology behind that, the blockchain technology, what are the advantages of the technology, the power, the features that it is bringing to the economy, and you know, what are emerging applications that you see coming about. Also, we can go into a bit on the actual cryptocurrencies, your thoughts on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and others.
Sounds great.
So, yeah, I guess to begin with, can you give us an overview of cryptocurrencies in terms of the history and evolution?
Yeah, that's a great place to start, because what we find is there's a lot of misunderstanding. And as you and I were talking earlier, Richard, it is quite analogous to the early days of the internet. And when you think back to the perception in, say, 1994, if you said the word internet, most people had heard that word, but probably associated it with this idea of some online college chat room. And then a couple years later, they realized that it was a great place to find information. And now they've realized that it's, you know, changed the whole world and most business models along with it. So we think cryptocurrencies are really at that same stage, that, you know, the first reaction is people have heard of Bitcoin, but associated either with criminal activity or maybe think of it as internet monopoly money. But then they dig deeper and they find that there is something to Bitcoin that's pretty unique, which we'll talk about. And then as they get past Bitcoin, they realize Bitcoin is just really the beginning of this whole wave of cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology that's going to change a lot of how business operates globally. So when we go back in the story of Bitcoin, which was the first cryptocurrency, it dates back to 2008. And we think of it most easily as kind of a sort of a virtual money and payment system. So if you think of payment systems like PayPal or Western Union, you know, it's got some of those elements. And it was started by kind of a mysterious founder that nobody really knows named Satoshi Nakamoto. And Bitcoin's essentially, by owning Bitcoin, you're essentially owning a piece of this system, which, again, some people associate with a store of value, but at its core, it's a payment system globally. But the real key behind Bitcoin and all these cryptocurrencies is the technology, which is referred to as blockchain. And what's really interesting, if you think of Bitcoin, is it's, you know, compare it to a bank. If you go to a bank and try to get your money, we're long past the days where they go to the vault and pull out real physical money. It's really an accounting ledger, a private accounting ledger, that the bank has, and they're the middleman, and they have to give you access to your money. Well, Bitcoin has taken that and made it in a public accounting ledger, something that's transparent, that gives you control of your own money, where instead of having a bank as a middleman, it's really a system that's peer-to-peer. So the system's maintained by all of these users and a group of people referred to as miners that help audit the system. So every transaction is seen in the light of day, and it takes a number of people almost auditing it to confirm a transaction. So you get rid of the bank and the middleman. And what this really creates and has created in Bitcoin is this idea of a trustless system. The idea that for you and I to transact, I don't really need to know who you are or trust who you are as a person, do my background check. All I need to know is I need to trust the Bitcoin system itself, that if I'm receiving a payment for you, that the payment's been received or I've sent the payment to you. So in this way, it's really revolutionized money and payment systems, because now I don't need a bank. I don't need a middleman standing between me and my money. So as I mentioned earlier, though, and we'll go into some of the tenets of blockchain in more detail, this movement is really much bigger than Bitcoin. Bitcoin is kind of the beginning, the application of a payment system and maybe a store of value. The next big wave in the development was really the founding of Ethereum in 2014, which in layman terms I'd call kind of a technology protocol or open source system where developers can actually build applications or so-called smart contracts that are using blockchain technology in different business applications to get rid of the middleman. So this time not in banking and money transfer, but in other industries where we've long relied on a middleman or gatekeeper in the middle that's taking a fee. So it's almost like a Microsoft operating system for blockchain applications. And that's given way now to really a rush of new companies in almost every industry.
And you've kindly provided a couple of interesting charts, which we'll make available in the write-up, the transcript to this interview discussion on Bitcoin and Ethereum. A very interesting fact that you have there is that the total market capitalization attributed to Bitcoin and Ethereum is 73% out of a total number of cryptocurrencies of over 700. That's quite fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. And yet the entire space is still only about $100 billion, which, although a big number, pales in comparison to some public companies out there. So it's really in its early innings.
And so what is exactly blockchain, if somebody were to ask, inquire, what is the nature of that technology? Is it sort of like a secure spreadsheet, like an Excel spreadsheet that's secure in some way?
Yeah, well, I'm not a programmer, but conceptually, I think it's an accounting ledger. It's a record-keeping mechanism, a program, an algorithm that's keeping record of all transactions. So if I send Bitcoin to you, it's transacting that I used to be the owner of that block on the chain or node, and now you are. So it's a way to make something where you used to need a middleman keeping tally of all of that to allowing a computer program to do it. But really the genius behind it is empowering the users to verify transactions. So if you and I have a transaction, before it can complete, it takes a certain number of users that are active in supporting the network. Those are referred to as miners, almost like gold miners in a gold analogy, to actually audit and confirm that transaction. So it's almost like I can feel secure in the fact that we made a transaction in Bitcoin and I got my money because a dozen people did an audit on it before it could go through. So the chance of them all colluding or something happening is pretty low. That's the best way I could describe it to someone who's not a programmer.
And what are some of the emerging blockchain applications that are currently out there and that are coming out in the near future?
Yeah. Well, I guess to give a little perspective to that, maybe just back to the internet analogy for a minute can kind of give the framework of what's coming out, because obviously the internet is probably the most sweeping technology of our time, and it did liberalize information sharing and collaboration. But it had kind of two primary problems that blockchain helped solve. The first was Even though it's the system we all use, it's still controlled by big corporate users. Meaning if you're on YouTube, YouTube gets most of the advertising revenue, not the posters of content or the active users. Same thing with Facebook. You know, most of the economics go to Facebook, the company, not the most, value add users and active users. We'll talk about how blockchain solves that. But the second thing with the internet is everything went digital in the world, but we still don't have a way to feel great about the security of data. So cybersecurity is still, you know, a huge issue. So what the blockchain has allowed and where these businesses are popping up are in a couple of areas. But blockchain has allowed, one, the power to come back into the hands of the people, as we talked about. So instead of Facebook getting all the economic benefit, there are models out there now where the users get the most economic benefit. If you post a video or an article and it has a huge amount of hits, you're actually going to be rewarded in the token or currency of that system. And if you're a contributor and you make value add comments, you're going to, you know, get a reward. It's not going to go to a kind of a platform provider like YouTube or Facebook. So I think that key concept of it being peer-to-peer has a real power to it, because fundamentally it cuts out the middleman.
Yeah.
And we'll talk in a minute about other areas, but I'd say social media is ripe for this. The idea of these are peer-to-peer social networks. Why are all the economics going to big companies? So again, this is, as you and I talked, from a financial repression perspective, this is a very empowering concept, because it's putting control back in the hands of individuals and away from governments and big companies, because they're not needed as the middlemen. The second big problem of security, we think the blockchain helps solve. I don't want to say it's an unhackable technology, but let's call it virtually unhackable, meaning there's no corporation, no CEO, no central server that can be hacked. It's literally a web of users or a whole ecosystem where the blockchain is copied and replicated on all the user computers, such that if one or two computers or one server is infected with a virus, it'll be identified by, you know, the remainder of the network. So it's possible to be hacked, but it would be much harder than today, where people are hacking into single servers. So when you start kind of going one step deeper on what are the applications coming out, we talked about some of the social media ones, and they go by names like Steemit and Library Credits and Singular DTV. I mean, there's all these upstart ones that are replicating YouTube and Facebook and other things, and again, incenting the users and the content providers. There's also people out there in this theme of giving power back to the people, of allowing you to earn money on things you have to lease out. And one of the more interesting ones is this company Golem, or this coin Golem, where if you have extra computing power, you can basically lease it out, and somebody can garner all of the world's computing power into probably the biggest supercomputer in the world, and you, the person lending out your CPU power, is getting incented for it in Golem's coin or token. So you've got some really innovative things. You've got gaming coins coming out, the idea that maybe fantasy sports, maybe normal gaming will start rewarding winners and users using their own, you know, coins. So you have this whole element of peer-to-peer coins and things that are where you've already got natural networks. On the other side, though, back to the cybersecurity, we talked about the issues of, you know, sensitive data and all these hacks and cybersecurity issues we're finding. And so I really believe any sensitive data in the future is going to run through some type of blockchain technology. Now, that may be blockchain technology developed by private corporations for their own company. It may be some of these other applications. But you've now got companies out there trying to use blockchain to make healthcare records unhackable. You've got companies out there like StorageCoin. I keep saying companies, but I really am referring to coins or token companies, where they're trying to create an unhackable cloud storage service. So if you're backing stuff up, personal information, pictures, things to the cloud, that can't easily be hacked in the way it can today. And you know, those are two things that I think solve the issues you talked about. But this idea of a trustless system and eliminating the middleman goes even further and can disrupt almost any industry with a middleman. So think of industries like real estate, where you've got escrow companies and title companies, all these people in the middle of a transaction just to make sure you're both good parties and each party, you know, makes good on their promises. Blockchain technologies could end up eliminating all of those middlemen in the future, or even things as common as stock exchanges today. I mean, why can't there be a global network of peer-to-peer users trading Apple stock where there's no middle centralized exchange taking a fee from every transaction? Now, I think you might have a couple thoughts on the regulatory issues with that, but conceptually, this idea of getting rid of the middleman, even in these coin offerings, instead of seeing all these IPOs on Wall Street where Wall Street takes a huge fee, we're starting to see this new phenomena referred to as initial coin offerings, which are these businesses coming out and not paying fees to Wall Street, but coming out and issuing a coin, almost like a crowdfunding fundraise, where people that put money in get a coin, which inherently is a piece of the system. So the value in the coin is you own a piece of the platform. And interestingly enough, Richard, this year alone, the initial coin offering market has raised $327 million, whereas the venture space has invested $295 million in these technologies. So you're starting to see this initial coin offering market take off, and maybe that's the future of fundraising. Again, unless there are regulatory issues that pop up, but they haven't thus far.
That's all fascinating. So this represents potentially incredible opportunities in a number of areas.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really just beginning. So, you know, irrespective as to whether somebody wants to be an investor in the space, I think it's you can step back and think about our economy today and look at industries that are likely to be disrupted and, think critically about what to do about it. If you work in one of those industries, or it could be an opportunity for entrepreneurs to disrupt many industries.
And a key point on these blockchain applications is that a number of cryptocurrencies can be applied to each application, right? We're not mandated to use Bitcoin or fixed upon one cryptocurrency. It's all likely to be interoperable. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, that's what kind of makes it so exciting. I mean, it's true entrepreneurial spirit at its best. Bitcoin right now is kind of by market cap the largest payment store value system, but this is technology, so it doesn't have to stay that way. Just like MySpace disappeared and Facebook came out of second or third place or wherever it was, it is uncertain who will be the winner. But because these are not corporations and centrally controlled enterprises, these platforms, as I'll call them, evolve themselves, meaning Bitcoin today and Bitcoin 5 years from now could be very different things. And it's really up to the Bitcoin user base and, again, these more active miners who are maintaining the system and collectively kind of voting to make changes to see where things evolve. So, you know, if there's an upstart coin that's competing with Bitcoin, Bitcoin itself could decide to change to be more competitive. So it really is this amazing free market experiment right now that's a little bit like the Wild West. And you've got, I mean, that's part of the caution, because you've got a lot of ideas getting funded that are simply ideas. And you've got other businesses that, you know, might be great ideas, but are kind of at the very beginning. Now, again, if we were critical and we went back and looked at the first week of YouTube being out there or the early days of Facebook, I'm sure it would leave a lot to be desired, too, from where they're at today. So, but it is an area that's highly volatile and very exciting, but it's definitely the Wild West.
So if we focus down on the actual cryptocurrency landscape, what does that look like today in terms of the types of cryptocurrencies, what they are, and what their potential is?
Yeah. Well, I think as we talked a little bit about, I mean, right now, by most counts, there are about 750 cryptocurrencies, so more than anybody probably, you know, thinks there are. But collectively, it's only about $100 billion of value. So again, imagine if you could have gone back in the early days and someone told you, well, all internet stocks together are 100 billion. It might seem like a big number, but now that we sit here today in 2017, if you could have bought the internet for 100 billion, you would have done it. So I think, you know, there are a lot of companies. There's only a handful with scale right now. And that's why when you cited earlier, Richard, that Bitcoin and Ethereum together are over 73% of that market capitalization. They're the big ones. But this space is just beginning. I mean, a lot of these coins, a lot of these ideas I referenced are things that have just come out in the last 6 months. So this is brand new. So just like YouTube started with a couple million dollars invested, and it's now probably a $10 billion plus enterprise within Google, you know, some of these things will likely be big disruptors. Now, that's not to say that the entrenched powers won't evolve and try to ingrain blockchain technology in their systems as well. But I think what makes this exciting and so disruptive is that the whole concept is peer-to-peer. That means users and content providers should get paid, not just the corporations. So I think it's a fundamental shift we're seeing, and we're seeing a lot of people really interested in blockchain and not quite sure how to navigate the space as they look into it, because it is brand new.
And what is the potential evolution? Do you see governments getting into this in terms of establishing cashless societies based on cryptocurrencies, but using government-based cryptocurrencies? And will governments allow the use of non-government cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or Bitgold and other types of cryptocurrencies? Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The risks out there, the primary risk is what governments do, because there is no telling how far they can go to stop it. But I use the same analogy back to the internet. You know, even if they wanted to stop the internet, could they have? I don't know. And would they have shot themselves in the foot so much by giving up that economic benefit? So it's tough to say. I mean, the central banks, governments, we know want control. On the other hand, right now, you're starting to see more and more countries kind of throw the towel in and say, we can't control this because it's not a central entity. It's not just something local. It's a global market. So if we shut it down in America and everybody else adopts it, they have a huge technological lead over us. And so you've seen some really interesting developments. You saw Russia go from very adverse to all these cryptocurrencies to being very open about it. And in fact, Putin just met with Vitalik Buterin, the founder of Ethereum, I think, last week. So that's an interesting sign. Japan just on April 1st made Bitcoin legal tender, you know, as good as the yen in the country. So think of that impact. So if you're a Japanese investor under that system and burdened with that debt with negative interest rates, you think everybody would put a piece of their money in something like that. And you've even got countries like Australia slated this summer to make Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies legal tender. So, you know, I don't know. You would think it's one of two things. Either governments are letting this happen to allow people to become used to a cashless thing and then might come in and try to enforce their own system, or they've conceded they can't control it. I don't know. Do you have a point of view on that?
I think that it's likely that the cryptocurrencies which are based or regulated within the financial system and perhaps private-based would likely be allowed to you know, coexist with government-based cryptocurrencies. So if you have a cryptocurrency like Bitgold, which provides compliance to regulations within the financial system, even though it is outside of the banking system, it does comply with the banking type of regulations for deposits. So I would say in that case, the governments would allow those type of cryptocurrencies to coexist. And in that sense, it's better to have or to be into cryptocurrencies which are either backed by some type of commodity like gold or perhaps just private-based relative to government, you know, fiat-based cryptocurrencies.
Right. But it does bring up a good fact. I mean, given that the fractional reserve banking system is so overlevered globally, but just thinking about the U.S. for a minute, you know, if 5 to 10% of people, if everybody put 5 to 10% of their money in Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrencies, the whole banking system, you know, implodes on itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're right. We do face some really unknown forces ahead. But right now, even in the U.S., there hasn't been a big move to crack down on it. I mean, it's given, even though it's not treated as currency and tax-free, it is given capital gain treatment for long-term holding, which, you know, is more beneficial than some other assets. So I don't know. Again, I'm back to it's a global world. So a country that chooses to really crack down on it faces a big technological disadvantage relative to other countries that are endorsing it. And so I think you're going to have a race for countries wanting to endorse it, but maybe the risk is a big global clampdown at some point. It's hard to say. But for right now, you know, the future looks really bright from a technological point of view.
What are your thoughts on these cryptocurrencies as being stores of value? Do you see them as more of payment systems? Are they deriving a lot of their value from the ability to move money around, like many have pointed out, the use of Bitcoin by Chinese in China, looking to diversify outside of China in terms of their asset holdings. You know, so perhaps some of the value has been derived from that utility value of being able to move money around. What are your thoughts on that? Is it a real store of value?
Yeah, well, it's an excellent question, because I think one of the biggest questions most people new to the space have is, why do these things have any value? Explain to me why Bitcoin's worth what it is, or Ethereum. And so when you step back, I guess the way I view it is, owning a coin, a Bitcoin or an Ethereum token, is essentially owning a piece of the platform they've created. So it's not that different than if Facebook, instead of being a public stock, had Facebook coin. And if you owned, you know, 10% of the Facebook coin, it was like you owned 10% of Facebook. So I view it very analogous to owning equity. It's almost like you own a piece of the system. So if the system is Bitcoin and you believe it's a valuable payment system and more people will come on board, that in and of itself is a form of store of value. Now, that may be different than owning gold and other things. I don't think we have to, you know, say they're the same. They're not. But just say it's a payment system for a moment. The current market capitalization or size of Bitcoin is about $43 billion. So it's grown a lot. It's done tremendously well. But the market capitalization of PayPal, another payment system, is $61 billion. Visa's $211 billion. So I step back and say, okay, is the value assigned to all of Bitcoin reasonable? It sure seems like it to me, because I would imagine Bitcoin's got the potential to be much, much bigger than PayPal and probably surpass a lot of these credit card valuations over time. So I look at it that way, but it is a hard thing to assess. Same thing with Ethereum. I don't have the number in front of me. I think there may be $34 billion, but you compare that to $500 billion for Microsoft. You know, could they be the next, quote, operating system for blockchain applications? They could be. They may or may not be, but, you know, I think you have to look at value on a relative basis and acknowledge that what you're really owning when you own a coin is a piece of the system. I think once you get to that level of understanding, it's a little easier to think about how value works and why people are assigning value to these tokens or coins.
So is it in a bubble or is it just volatile, just like other currencies?
Yeah, I think it's just inherently volatile because it's unregulated and it's the Wild West, and, you know, it's got a trajectory that's going to happen quicker than the tech boom did. So if technology stocks started surfacing around 1994, 1995 and ran to 2000, so 5 to 6 years, you know, maybe this is a tighter cycle. I think we're going to see a bubble perhaps, but I don't think we're there yet. And I say that because in all the anecdotal evidence we get, we find that still most people don't really understand this space. In polling people, almost nobody's an investor, even in Bitcoin and in Ethereum. If you really ask 1,000 friends with that are pretty well to do with money. Very few people actually have money in. And so I think the space from a investor point of view has been dominated by kind of techies, people that knew the technology and got involved early and get it, or some traders. And you know, it's a difficult space to navigate. It's not as easy as just going to your Fidelity account, at least today, or Schwab, and just buying the stuff. You have to navigate these private exchanges. You have to hold it in these things called private wallets. There's a lot of security issues you've got to be aware of. So it's a pretty treacherous thing. It's taken us a long time as investors to get up to speed on how you navigate it. So I think given how rough the landscape is of doing it, it just seems to me like the demand side is just beginning. That if the door starts opening for easier ways for people and institutions to put money in, you're going to see the demand side grow. And you're also going to see the supply side grow as these disruptive businesses shake up other industries. So I think, again, the analogies are pretty good with the internet boom. You're going to see probably a big boom ahead. And somewhere down the road, you're going to see a washout of a lot of the ideas that should have never been funded or really had no use case. So like the modern day pets.com, some of that. But out of those ashes will come, you know, the Facebooks and the Googles and the Amazons and everybody else. So, you know, it's going to be a highly volatile area. But I think for people that are looking for the next growth engine in the world, there's no more exciting place than this. I think the blockchain tsunami has really just begun to sweep over the world.
Yes, and as you mentioned, we are in the second inning only. And also you mentioned this technology will revolutionize almost every business.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. It's pretty remarkable. The more time I spend on it, the more excited I get about the prospects for blockchain in all the applications in the future. So I think for those people that aren't taking the time to really understand it, they're missing something arguably as big as the internet revolution, you know, where if they can take the time and understand it today, they're going to have such an edge ahead.
Well, great. Thank you very much for your insight, Brett. How can our listeners learn more about your work?
Yeah, they can go to windrockwealth.com. That's our wealth management company. We have a research and analysis section, or they can reach out. I've got a long email, but I will. It might be in the repostings. I'll leave my phone number, which is 312-650-9593. We're investors in the space, and we spend a lot of time kind of understanding the structure of the space, and it's very unstructured. Like we said, it's the Wild West. So anybody dabbling in it needs to be very careful, but by the same token, it's a very exciting space to be part of.
Excellent. Great. Thank you very much, Brett.
Thank you, Richard.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.